No, I love Nisa Monogatari. That's the thing. I'm saying, like, all anime is compromised by sketchy fan service, so why not watch the one that's actually really smart and is also super compromised by sketchy fan service?
All I'm saying is I want to brush my little sister's teeth. Is that so wrong?
Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today is Andy.
Something stupid.
Duncan.
What he said.
Jeff.
Hello.
And John.
Hi.
We haven't had a really bad introduction blowout for a while, and what a surprise that after Andy returns after an absence.
Yeah, but you it was like red rag to a bull. You said don't say these things during the start.
You did. You set this up during the pre-roll. It's your fault.
Well, I'm suitably chagrined, but let's keep it moving. It's the end of an anime season. It's the end of the spring anime season. I can never remember which one is which season.
Yeah, spring.
I actually watch like a lot of airing anime, although it doesn't compare to, I think, John, you had a 15 item list.
Was it really 15?
you went through a lot of stuff, and I'm guessing you dropped a lot of stuff. Let's run through your list.
Okay, sure. The list, from what I can tell, I guess, involves Tada Never Falls in Love, which I thought was really cute, and then they introduced a pervy president, and I didn't want to watch anymore because he's fucking awful. And I just kind of fell off. Also, it's on High Dive, and I didn't check it every day, and I've sort of prefaced everything. I've sort of just not watched a lot of anime lately, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It did fall off quite badly after Promising Starts.
Yeah.
The press was... He didn't ever get redeemed. He was just quite an annoying character throughout.
Just bad. Just a bad
just
character.
Just fucking annoying and like very misogynistic in not funny ways. Not that it's hard to not be funny when you're being misogynistic. But you know what I mean?
I guess.
Yeah, but that's like the setup for the joke and not the punchline.
Yeah, that thing. Next, Magical Girl Sight. I watched the first episode. It was really sadistic and awful. And I think I said at the time that I was going to watch a second episode because I wanted to see.
Yeah, you said you thought they would turn it around or make it go towards something.
I think it was more like I wanted to see how bad it could go. Magical Girl Sight, it's bad. Don't even bother. Anyway, I watched the first half of the second episode and then dropped it, so that's cool.
Wow, I didn't even make it all the way through the second episode.
I couldn't. It was just more sadism and just like, how shitty can we make this girl's life be? Whoa.
Someone's like, what if Madoka, but like,
but just
a lot
but,
more
but edgy. Yeah.
Madoka.
Take. Exactly. It's really bad. Yamushi Petal. I think that was this season. Is that this season?
Yeah, that's been going on for two seasons now.
Yeah.
It's still going.
I'll finish it one day, but I sort of just fell off of that too. Like I missed an episode, and then I missed a second episode, and it was like, well...
And that's the end, yeah.
Where did you get up to?
I don't know, middle of a race. They were riding bikes, and...
A lot of bikes happened.
I think they all finally met up again in the middle of the race, despite everybody being so far separated it could never possibly happen.
And they'll never really win or make their comeback. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. But now they're back together, so they'll probably win. I don't know. We'll find out. Or... not.
I was going to say they won't win the second day, but they'll win the third. And they're on the second day right now.
Yeah, whatever.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is what, you know, if you know what Yamushi Petal is, then you know what it is. And if you don't, then you don't care. Space Battleship Tiramisu was really funny. And I watched six episodes and then I fell off and then I didn't watch more. Even though they're really short, so I really could have just caught up like this morning.
Mm.
But I didn't because I forgot about it until going through this list just now.
It's projected to actually do not that bad for a short series, like about a thousand a volume, so...
That's good. It was really funny.
It's getting a second season in October, so...
Nice. I will watch that and hopefully not fall off of it. Food Wars. The new Food Wars, I watched like 20 seconds, then I closed it and I didn't pick it back up.
Oh, I like this arc.
I just... Yeah, that's everybody just... It's Food Wars, man. It's more Food Wars, and I'm tired of it, and it doesn't do anything clever or fun. It's just the same shit over and over.
I mean, shouldn't it be... Isn't it the point in, like, a long-running show where there needs to be a time skip so they can, like, mix up the relationships and the powers and stuff?
Anything. Do anything.
They have flashbacks.
Well, right now, they're really... What's that fucking girl? Nakula Alice. That sort of, like, romance train has... Yeah, has like departed the station fully now. And then also the fact that they're on trains going through Hokkaido. I don't know.
Wait, hold on. They're actually on. Are they fucking on these trains? Is that what you're saying?
No, not yet. But Alice, is that right? They are on trains.
They are on trains. Yeah. They do go on trains, John.
Alice is the white haired one.
Oh, not Alice. Who's the other one then?
It doesn't matter. The blonde haired one.
This is the best content. The best content is like, what's this anime character's name?
Top content. Anyway.
Listen, they love each other or whatever.
But
it's the worst because she's an awful character. I hate her. Anyway.
She isn't very good, but I'm enjoying it. And also, the first episode's in Hachinohe, and it was cool because I was like, oh, yeah. I know this, and I know that location, and I know where they're doing some of this stuff, and I was like, eh.
There's definitely a huge appeal to recognizing places in the fiction you're consuming.
Yeah.
Like, I really like that. Even if the show sucks, I'll get a little bit of a kick from that and be pretty happy.
Yeah. I mean, even when they were leaving the train station, I was like, that is legitimately the train station, and I can tell.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, that's how everybody in Vancouver feels watching anything on FX. Just constantly.
Yeah, but those don't... But in the fiction, they don't take place in Vancouver.
No, but we know. We're used to it.
It's the fate of all Canadians. Are you talking about Irina? Is that the character who's the OJ?
Yes, okay.
Irina, yeah. Yeah.
There you go, listeners.
That's it, Edina. But yeah, that romance has departed now.
They all know who I was talking about when I say she sucks. Nobody likes her, right?
Thank you for not you making this a good anime.
I like Nikumi. She's the best girl, but that's never gonna happen. Yeah.
No, that would be odd.
Is it fun to ship people on Food Wars? Is that like does that provide you with pleasure?
Is it fun to do anything?
I mean, the show is essentially shipping them all with you every time they eat anything, so
that is true. That's true.
Oh, Christ. Okay, Gurazeni.
Yeah, Gurazeni. I watched 6 episodes of it. I still really liked it. It was, you know, it did not deliver as much as I would have hoped from the first episode. And the characters, like, they're not introducing very many characters. It's really weird. Like, they introduce them and then they just kind of, like, it's an episode. And I still don't, like, I need to catch up, obviously, because I don't know shit. But the ED has this woman sitting on a hill watching some people play baseball, and it just shows her. Who the fuck is she? Where does she come in? I don't know. I have 7 episodes left to find out.
It would be so daring if she did not, like, figure in the anime at all. She's just some lady watching
them
play.
She just never showed up, ever. Yeah. The entire ED is just focusing on her, and then at the end she picks up a picnic basket, presumably to go eat with one of the players, because she's, like, cheering them on. But I have not seen her yet. In fact, there are no women at all, I don't think. Maybe there's some... Oh, no, there are some that one of the baseball players is, like, you know,
fucking
carousing with. Is that a word that applies? I don't know.
Carousing, like having parties and squeezing bodies. Yeah,
yeah, that one, that's the word. Cool. Anyway,
you also were going to watch Major's second, weren't you?
Yeah, I'll get to that. Chill your grill. Dang. Lupin the Third was fucking great. What I've watched again, I fell off and have not finished it.
You did all right, John.
I watched 6 episodes and then hey, here we are. I'm doing great.
It's what happened 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know, man. Listen, like I said, I just kind of fell off of watching anime a lot, and I'll get back to it one day, years later. Caligula, I watched the first episode of that, I think I mentioned before, and it was very pretentious in a way that kind of made me want to keep watching it, but then I didn't. Full Metal Panic, Invisible Victory. I never watched Second Raid, so I couldn't watch Invisible Victory. Megalobox. What?
Can I quickly talk about Full Metal Panic and in a bad way?
Oh, I forgot that you were watching that, Duncan.
I made the bad decision to that. I'll watch a couple of episodes of this and just see if it is as bad as I sort of assumed it would be. Because everyone, all we heard before it started was, this is Full Metal Panic, but less comedic and more serious. And I was like, oh God, that's what I really don't want.
Yeah. What everyone wanted from Full Metal Panic, a lot more serious po-faced shit.
And so at the beginning, it was exactly that. It was more po-faced, it was more serious. And then halfway through, it has an arc where it is literally robot wrestling for like 3 episodes on a tropical island. And that was fun. And there were stupid jokes. And it didn't have the most of the main cast. So it was just the main character and a new load of mooks. And it was a lot of fun. And unfortunately, that ended when they blatantly fridged a female character and just went back to po-faced seriousness. And it was just like, oh, god damn it.
Yeah, that's Full Metal Panic.
It's really funny how much Full Metal Panic loves fridging female characters, but refusing to kill Garo, god, whatever his name is.
Does he come back, by the way? Tell me if he comes back.
Yes, he's referenced, but not back. He's referenced.
Is he referenced as alive?
No, referenced as someone who has been killed and beaten.
Yes.
Now you're going to watch Full Metal Panic Second Rage. You're like, yes, he actually dies.
Yeah, I'm going to be so excited the whole time.
Then final episode. He's back.
Oh, no.
Quick clarification on what the term fridging means, because I'm still not quite sure. Because this is a new term and I've not heard of it. And I don't think maybe any of our listeners would have heard of it too.
It's a trope where women are killed off as motivation for the main characters, basically.
Usually male characters. A woman has like an abrupt, arbitrary death to give the main character sad man feels that he'll go take revenge.
It is sourced, or the original instance of it that coined the term is, I think it was Iceman or was it Green Lantern? I don't know. One of the
Green Lantern.
Okay, Green Lantern's wife was killed and then literally cut up and stuffed into his fridge for him to find when he came home. And that was his, you know, driving motivation for the following arc.
It's like, I'm angry now. Time to go confront the villain.
Fair enough.
Sexist trope. Boom.
Just feels like a recent thing, right? Or am I just behind the curve?
I think you're just behind. Fair enough. Not up to snuff on the terminology.
I mean, I think it's entered mainstream discourse in the past like 3, 4, 5 years where people are like, oh,
yeah.
A lot of times women or like people of color or like queer people like get killed so that like the straight white man can be like, oh, now it's on. they killed someone vulnerable who I liked. So now this is serious.
Rage and revenge being the only acceptable outlets of emotion in male characters.
Yes, yes. Hooray for the patriarchy.
Yep.
Okay, back to John's list. How far are we?
It's Megalobox.
About halfway through, I guess.
Yeah, oh, Megalobox.
Yeah, Megalobox is where I'm at now. I don't think it's a bad show, but I keep cheering for its failures because everybody is fucking hyping it up as the greatest thing ever. And also, I still fucking hate their decision to downscale this fucking...
It's baffling.
In the end of season roundup on Anime News Network, they praised like how daring it was for them to like literally destroy their own art to like make it look old. I'm making huge scare quotes, listeners.
I get it. I get the intent. It's
dumb. A bad idea.
It's bad. Like, why would you...
I quite like the look.
No, you don't.
I'm enjoying
Shut
it.
Shut up.
I do.
Andy, like you watch fucking Kimono Friends, so you just don't know about art.
Yeah, you don't care about things being ugly. This has been proven time and time
also,
again.
Also, you've got to remember my TV probably is not up to snuff, so I can't really notice.
Do you have an HD television? 1080?
It's just about HD. It's just about 1080.
HD.
Is that the sticker on the box when you bought it?
Just about 1080.
It was like what? HD in it?
Question mark at the end. I love you know, my TV now, there's like a setting on HDs which is really specific. It's like it's a safety security signature reading thing. And my TV now can't recognize it, so I can't watch Blu-rays.
Oh, HDCP. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your TV fails HDCP protocol?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
I think you have like a weird stolen Chinese TV.
Yeah, I can't watch Blu-rays, and I can't watch anything on the PS4. The only reason I'm using my Xbox One now is because I can somehow watch it on that. I don't get why, but the Xbox One lets me do it.
How did you do this?
I don't know. I think I had my PSVR plugged in, and then I let my friends borrow it because I never use it. And then that might have downscaled the output somehow, or that authorized
the thing. I don't think.
No idea. But yeah, so.
That is whack.
I have an old TV.
Anyway, so that explains why you think Megalobox looks good.
Thanks for Andy's tech corner. Yeah.
It looks good because it looks the same as everything else I watch. Hell yeah.
That's definitely a bad Andy impression. You could do a lot better than that.
Oh, he looked good because he looked like everything else. Oh, wow.
Good. Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins is exactly what I was hoping for.
You nailed it on the head. I can't beat that.
Yeah, Megalobox is funny because I was actually looking on some Anna thing which does like the sales tracking, which is like a bizarre addictive candy to me. It's just like looking at these numbers and being like, oh, ooh, Gundam Build Divers is only going to make about 1,300 this season.
The site is so ugly on phones.
Oh, now you care about something looking bad. Put it on your TV.
I want to use the fucking website. It's like when I'm on it, I'm just like, what am I clicking on? I'm not quite sure. And then it's terrible.
Yes, but at least as of about a month ago, Megalobox is set to make about 200 per volume, which is probably like the biggest flop I've seen in a long time.
That's really sucks.
Is it DVD or Blu-ray you're talking about?
It doesn't calculate that way. It calculates it holistically, like it with both volumes together.
I mean, I can imagine everyone saying, well, there's no reason to buy it on Blu-ray because it's not going to look any better.
The way they have an algorithm that tracks its ranking in like the DVD section of Amazon, because that ranking is determined by a function of price plus how many pre-orders there are. So like things that are pre-ordered a lot go higher in the ranking. So it's based on that. It could make a lot more, and there are a lot of instances where a lot of people are impulse buyers, or where the pre-orders vastly overstate how many will actually be bought. I think they point out that Owari Monogatari got like so many pre-orders from people that just like next Monogatari thing pre-ordered, and it was predicted to sell like a third of a million copies because of that. And then it underperformed because people that would be like the greatest sales triumph since fucking K-On. But no, Megalobox is really like people aren't buying it. They're liking it, they're talking about it online, but they aren't buying it. So it's very interesting to see that mismatch.
These are Japanese sales only, right?
Yes.
Yeah. See, from the beginning, I think Megalobox struck me as one of them Westerns animes.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Cowboy Bebop and the like.
Yeah, but Western anime fans don't really buy discs by and large.
I mean, that's kind of my point, right? Like, I think it'll be really popular over here just because of what it is. And it's, I don't know. That's kind of what I figured from the beginning was going to happen, I guess. I don't know.
I wonder if they're like making good on licensing and whatnot. And again, then having a lower res show doesn't look so bad because if people have crappy streaming, they're not losing out on anything.
Maybe if they suddenly announce that they're going to do it with a HD unblurred thing, sales. Yeah. That's what they're waiting for. They're just waiting until everyone's doing it. And it's actually, we've removed it for the Blu-ray release. And everyone's like, buy it now.
I would actually be tempted to go watch it then, because it does look like a very beautiful anime, but
it's great.
It looks great when it's not, if you don't mind the downscaling. The visually, it's very coherent.
I do think the animation is pretty subpar, and the fight choreographs, which are unfortunately a rather large part of the show, are also not that spectacular.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed by that in some of the later fights. I actually think some of its better fight choreography came in the very early stuff, and then it was like, we've established how he fights, and now it's just about this one special thing he's going to use to beat each opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And we only really need to show that punch.
So it becomes Punch Out the Anime, basically.
Yeah, it's not a bad description. Yeah.
It doesn't sound bad. I mean, I don't know. It sounds all right.
I would watch a Punch Out anime. Fuck, that'd be good. Anyway, so as to the actual content, I didn't finish it. I got to episode 7.
Oh, that's farther than usual.
I think I'm about that far too.
Like I said, I don't think it's bad. I actually like watching it. The music is so fucking good. Damn,
yeah, music's
got
amazing.
A good soundtrack.
And they did a better job than most things of giving his opponents good backstories and actually being.
I think that's true, but also one of the biggest complaints I have about it, and from reading other people's impressions as they continued watching it, it seems to continue, that they have this really unique sort of world setup, but they don't really dig into it a lot. They go into like an individual character's story, but they don't touch on the world surrounding them, and it's kind of weird. It's like kind of backwards for anime too, because usually they go super deep into the lore of the world, but the characters are really shallow.
I was just gonna say that kind of reminds me of Redline in that way. Like there's loads of backstuff in that anime, but or the film, but They don't really delve into it in the anime.
But I think if in a movie you can get away with just like having a world that feels rich.
Oh yeah.
But when you have like 13 episodes, mm-hmm. and by like episode 8 you don't really know the political situation of like the place where it takes place.
I mean, the political situation just seems to be like, there's a big corporation, and as we all know, corporations are bad. That's all you really need to know.
It's not even that, like, right? It doesn't ever really paint the corporation as bad. It's just, like, they exist, and they're the ones driving this tech and competition, and that's kind of where it ends.
And he's just super, super lefty, so he's the corporations are automatic.
I mean, the big twist of the show is it's called Megalobox, and Megalobox is set up to be this, like, human with augmented gear fighting thing. Mm-hmm. And the big twist early on is that the main character Joe drops his gear. He stops using it and he fights basically ungeared versus everyone else. And so without establishing what gear's prevalence in this culture and what it means in terms of status and jobs and all these other things, that decision doesn't have anything behind it apart from its stunt.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a really big fan of Show Don't Tell, but I feel like they show way too much and don't tell anything in this situation, and it's like, well, what the hell's happening?
Did you get as far as the war veteran boxer?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, I got to him.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually, his whole thing was really good. They did a pretty good job of showing, like, what PTSD is like. I feel like it wrapped up a little too neatly, but other than that, I don't really have a complaints with him.
I thought it was just like a really good, like, it's one of the few times I've ever seen someone who's using prosthetics in a anime where their physical strength is what defines them. And here you had a boxer with prosthetic legs who was straight up shown as like one of the few people who was a match for possibly even better than Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and then also it was these prosthetic legs in the end that made him lose the fight.
Yeah, because he like pushed him too hard and it was digging into his
yeah, digging in
flesh and yeah.
Sounds like a good anime. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's good. I'm liking it.
It is good.
I mean, that story was, I think, the high point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, so far for me, like, that's where I've gotten, basically. But
I mean, there's a couple of other, there's one boxer coming up is the brother of the CEO of the big corp, and he's got quite an interesting little backstory, and his episode was fun as well. But of the other opponents, none of them really stood out.
I need to finish it.
It feels like gears are used for only boxing, and I don't think there's any real world application for them outside of that,
which is bizarre, right? Like,
they always remind me of those, you know, that really old, like, boxing, like, physical game that kids have? Like,
Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of them.
We have one of those at the office. Anyway, yes.
Those. We already had that. It was called Real Steel. We had a movie with Hugh Jackman.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's okay. Everyone forgot about that movie because it was
terrible.
Like, I think every review was just like, it's not terrible. It's a movie.
All right. After Megalobox, this is where I'm going to get to Major Second, which is a very, like, kids shonen baseball series. And it ranges from, like, really charming with how he, like, struggles with his whole inferiority complex compared to his dad, to very, well, sports shonen, where it's never usually, well, actually, I guess not. I don't know, man. It's kind of good. I like it. I just sort of, like, my brain just took, like, three different, like, flips, you know, trying to figure out how I feel about it. I like it. It's good. It's definitely it's geared towards kids, like, more than even most sports shonen series are, because he's much younger. He's still in middle school, and, like, he acts like a middle schooler.
I mean, that was the appeal of the original Major, was that it goes from him in, like, kindergarten to him playing the Japan, like, World Series, whatever theirs is.
Koshien?
I hope they go that far, because this is...
No, he goes professional. Like, he's, like, all the way to, like, a professional team.
He's still playing professionally in this series, too. So, like his dad still plays professionally. He's overseas while... wow, I forgot his name. Sosuke? No. Nope.
Doesn't matter.
Don't know. That guy. Anyway.
Baseball kid.
Yeah. So, it does set up, like, he's going to keep going. Like, that's what he wants to do. And he and his best bud, who was the original character's best bud's son. So, you know, there's a whole anime fate thing going on. It's fun. Yep.
You should still watch Cross Game. I'm never going to, but like
that. I was...
It's so good. It is the Chihiafaru of baseball anime.
Well, we'll see. My Hero Academia continues to be My Hero Academia. I love it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Boku no Hero Academia.
Boku no My Hero Academia.
Watashi ga Hero Academia.
I want to know why you think... Because we've had this discussion and sort of very briefly, and I said I thought that it had a poor start, and you were like, no, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So what was good about the first half of the series then?
The series or this season?
This season.
I guess series for you a season. I thought it was good. I don't know. It was more My Hero Academia.
You thought it came out strong? Did you think like it fixed problems that you clearly had with previous core?
I think it was the status quo, and then it got better because of how it ended, or that like specific arc ended. Like, I don't think it was a dip at all. I can understand why you would say, oh, it's not doing anything special here, but I definitely don't think it got worse.
The few problems I had was, one was just, like, Deku's power. Like, he defeated a guy and used 200% of his strength.
That's just anime naming conventions. Yeah, get over it.
It really bothers me.
You watch One Piece, get over it. No.
But go fuck yourself.
If that's annoyed you, you're going to be even more annoyed by the end.
They don't do this in One Piece, but they did do it in like...
Okay, here, let me tell you something about One Piece. At one point, Luffy says, or he's like pushing himself, you know, he goes into Gear Second for the first time. And I think it's,
yeah.
I think Sanji tells him, like, if you keep doing this, it's going to wreck your body. And Luffy's like, I don't care. And he keeps doing it. And guess what? His body's perfectly fine. This is in stark contrast to how Deku does things, where when he pushes himself, he actually permanently injures himself. And he needs to reel it back. Like, anyway, go on.
But he doesn't reel it back. Like, this is my issue. He does, though.
Like, that's the point. Like, he trains. He figures out how to actually use his powers, whereas Luffy just gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, but then he doesn't reel
it. There's a stark contrast between the two types of shonen.
Let Andy finish his point.
Listen.
Andy's right. I'm really excited. John. He's got a point.
Anyway, go on.
The fight with Muscle Boy.
He doesn't reel it back. Like he literally used 200% of his power and destroyed every bone.
It's just a dumb name.
He destroyed every bone in an arm. Like, and then it grew back, and it's just like you can't do that again. He's gonna fucking do it again.
I guarantee he won't.
He's controlling it, but I hope he doesn't, because it's like a constant shonen trope that nobody takes on.
That's exactly the sort of thing that this series addresses, though, is that it takes those types of tropes and makes them actually matter, as opposed to pretending they matter.
I mean, they're doing it right now. So far, I'm not believe that they actually matter. So far, I'm in there.
They selectively matter.
They pretend that it's matter.
They right specifically now. Say, after he wrecks his arm this time, that if you do it again, you will not be able to use your goddamn arms.
Yeah, and they said that last time when he did something too.
What they said last time... Well, no. What she said last time was, if you do this again, I won't heal you. She did heal him because, you know, he saved a kid.
So she healed him. So she lied. That was fun.
You know what this reminds me of? Is in Keijo when the main character discovers the vacuum butt cannon and, like, the teacher pulls her aside... And says, like, if you do that again, you're going to be in a wheelchair. And in fact, she has to learn not to use a super powerful move because it will put her in a wheelchair. And they follow through with that in the anime. And Keijo's actually good.
That's exactly what they're doing with Deku. Deku?
They're not, though. They're fucking they not are. Doing Deku yet.
Up to this
they're
point, everything they've done has been this way.
No.
Yes.
Because he literally destroyed his arm. I want to believe you, but I don't think they have yet. Also, I'm, like, not up to date with the anime, so... If it does change dramatically in the whole season.
John just headbutted his mic in anger.
Yeah. That's like the table flip of podcasting, I guess.
Okay, so My Hero Academia.
Good shit.
Contentious, clearly.
I don't even, like, it's not even like my favorite show or anything, but you're so wrong, it made me mad. Anyway, moving on. Golden Kamuy, good show.
I'm glad it's getting a second season. I'm so glad.
Yeah. I know the whole season you were like, I don't know how they're going to do this. It's clearly it can't end after this season. It's got to keep going.
I mean, I hope it makes disc sales, because otherwise I think the second season is going to get a very abrupt, weird ending. because they're clearly pacing very slowly. And it was kind of like a thumb in my face of like the last episode is just all Shiraishi at the track, just like giving away all his money. That was like 80% of that episode. It was just like our last episode of the season, gambling at a horse racing track, getting tricked by a swindler.
I would like to throw this out there. You say it's paced slowly, but it actually is paced way faster than the manga felt to me. And the manga felt like perfectly paced. But then again, I also knew there's a lot more coming out. So
I guess you're right. You're right to call me that. I don't think slowly. I think it's paced very eccentrically, where it will like rush through things that could be like a 3-episode arc in a different anime, and then it will just spin forever with them getting drunk in the tent. Or
it's a very it like deceives you into thinking it's gonna be a very strongly focused action show.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are obviously bursts of strong action, like for the most part, it's about these characters interacting with each other. And I think the crew even like grows over time more. Funnily enough, the anime, as we've got it, goes further than the English translated volumes.
Oh, wow.
Which,
and it's going to keep going, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I liked the H.H. Holmes murder house.
So good. I loved it.
I wasn't wild about the...
Wait, H.H. Holmes in there? I haven't seen it. Is H.H. Holmes
well, no, there? Well, no, but like someone else. There's a unfortunately, an extremely yandere trans woman who runs a murder hotel. And that's all in one episode. That was part where I would say it's paced like lightning fast.
Yeah,
the entire arc is resolved in one episode of them going to the hotel.
That could have been 3 episodes, you're right. Like in any other like shonen series, that would have been 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Of them playing mouse, cat and mouse.
Which I kind of like. As long as they're gonna take their time on the stuff that I really like, which is the character moments, like Asirpa and like I don't know, Anime News Network had like a really nice thing about how it's a lot of Golden Kamuy is about the anxiety of like not knowing when or how you're going to die, and how like Immortal Sugimoto, like actually a lot of his pathos comes from the fact that he thinks he's probably immortal, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Or rather, he's scared that he's immortal, but also scared that he's not immortal. And that kind of translates in this kind of like bravado and adventurousness. I don't know. Like I really like it. I want more of it.
I'm glad that you like it.
And I'm glad we're going to get more of it. No, I like it a lot. I'm tempted, if I had like any money, if I wasn't like entering my like 6 month of unemployment, I would buy the manga. I might just read it online.
It's a very pretty manga. The one big complaint I have about Golden Kamuy is that it does not look spectacular. CG pairs aside, I can ignore those, but it feels very like the base adaptation that you could do, like what you should do to be competent, and then not moving beyond that. Which I know I said it's about Ancient Magus' Bride before, but this gets by because it's also funny, whereas Ancient Magus' Bride is not.
My argument is, I agree that the art itself is not great, but I think that the CG allows for it to have a kind of higher kineticism that sometimes blows up, like with the wolf and the bear, but oftentimes it's just like, it has kind of a speed and smoothness to the way that that the characters move that are not smoothness, like a just like exactly the opposite, actually a roughness of like how they move. That's kind of because the CG is not perfect, but also I don't know, I've actually found it quite attractive, but it's generally most attractive when it's not moving.
Yeah.
But when it does move, sometimes it's interesting and different.
Anyway, the faces are superb.
Yeah.
Best anime faces.
Well, I mean, that's where all their work is going into is Asirpa's like Otsuma face, which I still don't find that a funny joke. Like it was funny and they're dragging it on too long.
I love
that
it.
That she thinks like curry and miso powder are poop. That's not my humor.
I get the impression at this point she knows it's not, but she continues to call it that.
Because it upsets.
Yeah.
I like that. Actually, the best face came when they're talking about dicks and Asirpa's like, oh yeah, I've seen a dick, because Sugimoto had stripped down to like dive into the water in the previous episode. She's like, yeah, I've seen a dick. They're not really that impressive. He's like, no, it was cold. I was about to dive into like the water.
That was a good joke.
And she's like, whatever. I'm not into dicks.
I don't even care. Yeah.
I'm glad there's gonna be more. Like I'm excited to be able to look forward to October, same as Space Battleship Tiramisu. And I should watch Space Battleship Tiramisu. It'd probably be something I like. I just don't like to pick up shows after the season started.
I think you would like it. It's very short episodes, so if you don't like it, oh well.
Yeah.
Not a lot of time lost.
Talking about terribly animated stuff, should we talk about Otokoi?
I got two more on my list.
Hey.
I got two more on my list and you guys can go on with your nerd shit. Hinamatsuri. Which I loved. It is my favorite show this season by far.
Yeah, it's up there for me too.
Yeah, I've heard good stuff.
I liked it, although it was a bit dry for me.
Yeah,
and I think it's just like not my kind of thing. So
I love me some dry comedy. It's my favorite, and I think the delivery in this show is superb.
Yes.
It's so good. That's all I really got to say. I just fucking love it. I want more. And the time skip at the end, from what I think I've read, that like the manga supposedly gets a lot better after the time skip, but I don't know if that's true. And I really want to see more, so I hope they make more. Also, I would like to say that it has really good animation, which you wouldn't expect from this kind of show, but it has these moments where it's just like, there's a fight scene in the last episode, or when Hina's like, Anzu's like doing telekinetic bullshit at Hina, and she's just sitting there with her face fucking flapping in the wind. It's so good. The animation's great. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising too, because that's that studio Feel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like a kind of recent studio, and it's the director of Uma Musume Pretty Derby, so it's also just like, you couldn't predict that this would be as good as it is. And I think actually, to like reference the numbers again, Hina Matsuri is not predicted to do that great. It's predicted to do 1500, which is used to be the bare minimum for like a successful anime, but now as costs have gone up, it's probably going to be like a qualified flop.
Please more.
It's a bummer. People were talking about it in Japan when I was over there, so I imagine it's going to do a bit better. Hopefully do a bit better than that.
I hope so.
Hopefully. I wonder, because it looks so good. I wonder if it was above average cost, though, too. So,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
And comedy aside, I also think it's very, very touching and sweet. Like, it's just got this huge emphasis on family and, like, finding family where you didn't have it before. And, it's just adorable and funny. love it. It gets a little creepy sometimes with the fucking naked little girls.
The best joke of the naked little girls was still, like, the two, like, teenage boys trying to imagine what stuff what's her face is in, but they like they don't know besides like the cover of romance novels where like a guy's like has his hand under a girl's shirt, but that's it.
Yeah. They're gonna do, and I don't know what happens after that. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, one last one.
Sword Art Online Alternative, Gun Gale Online. Woo! I thought it was fine. I liked it a lot up until a point, and then I liked it less, but I still think it ended well.
Yeah, the turn on the anime from like really grounded procedural about like learning a game and learning more about yourself to crazy over-the-top stuff about a character who's planning to kill herself because she just so bored and so into video games. And I watched the show because like M was teaching Lin good strategies that were like actually like real-life strategies. And then in the penultimate episode, you have characters like, instead of using an anti-tank rifle or their grenade launchers, they just charge a cabin across an open field, and then there's a duel where they're dueling in drifting Humvees flipping over. Ugh. Like, this show sold itself as something completely different than what it was, and I probably would have liked it more if it had just been open as like, look, there's gonna be this girl, and her personality is gonna be A, crazy, B, really good at the game, C, refer to 1 and 2 again. the ending was fine, but it just went into this over-the-top bullshit. And it was really weird to read reviews being like, I'm so glad that Gun Gale Online finally just like pulled out all the stops and had like all this crazy, ridiculous, reality-defying action that like the setting promises. And I'm like, you watch anime for different reasons than me.
Yeah. No, but like in the first episode, it like the climax of that episode is she goes into like anime moves and guns down 6 guys single-handedly.
Yeah.
No, but they establish rules for how she's able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They talk about her having like a high speed rating and stuff, and it's just like the payoff is having that told to you and then seeing an action. I think that's the parts where Gun Gale Online is the best, is when like they teach you about the guns having safeties, which there's no reason a gun should have a safety in a video game, but it's just like, oh, guns have safeties. And then 10 minutes later, she like does a thing to like turn the safety on M's gun, and then he has the hilarious like pleading for his life scene, which I've warmed up on as the show's gone on. And that was not like,
I love that scene,
the ridiculous height of like melodrama that it was before.
I think in my biggest disappointment of the final episode was actually M and his backstory, that he in the game he's this super competent, very knowledgeable protector. He seems like someone who, I mean, my conjecture was always that he was a bodyguard because he has all these tactical stuff.
Yeah, he seemed like an adult,
and as you say, he acts very mature and very tactically. And what do we find out is his backstory? Well, he's just a bit of an otaku. He's not a gun otaku, he's just an idol fan, and that's it.
Yeah, he's an idol fan who, because his the idol that he stalked was into Gun Gale Online. He got really good at Gun Gale Online. It just, I mean, that's, yeah. The contrast between who M appears like in the game and who M actually is in real life is the exact gap between what I wanted Gun Gale Online to be and what it actually was. Is like, oh, I thought this was a cool anime about like a mature guys and girls who like do fighting stuff, and then like, oh no, it's just like some weird otaku shit. So
in conclusion, I wish I could play all my video games with Fuka. She was great.
Fukujiro's the like best girl of the season. I don't like disqualify all your Hinamatsuri girls. I don't care. Like her, just like the fact that it was a running joke that she keeps getting her legs blown off was, yeah, was weird. And then she cuts off Len's hands at the in the finale, and she
it's how she cuts off Len's hands and with what?
Yeah, with her trench knife that she's been has been wearing as a hairpiece for the whole anime. Oh. And then when she meets M in real life, like that was what saved the M scenes for me. Because if it was just like quiet, serious Karen and like grim, weird M, just the part where Mayu, who is Fukushiro's player, sees M and she does like the oh, and she like leans in and like adjusts her glasses, and then she's like, "You look pretty handsome. I think I'd like to marry you. What do you say?" And he's like, "I am in love with someone else. Sorry."
She's so good. The way she's animated, like. Not like in quality, but just like how they decided to make her move as a character. So good.
Yeah, yeah. Even just when they're sitting, even when she's literally sitting in the car and he's like, and I've met the most beautiful woman in the world. And she's like, hey, turn around. And yeah. He's like, no, you guys are both beautiful, sure. But like, to me, what's her face? Kanazaki, Eliza Kanazaki is the.
She looks so young. She looks like she's like 13.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
She probably is. Just saying, I just
because they give a timeline, and like she has to be like in her late teens. So
right.
she just literally is just like 4 feet tall, because Gun Gale Online has apparently a lot implicitly to say about short people wanting to be tall and tall people wanting to be short.
Yeah.
And just every character who plays that game is like, man, I want to be a different height than I am in real life, which is something I literally never think about. So
yeah. It doesn't bother me either. I've never seen this anime. I probably won't. And
the first like 3 or 4 episodes are really good, and then it just become. It, I mean, like it imports a bunch of Sword Art Online stuff. It's like someone wrote a cool. I made a joke of like some guys like, oh yeah, it's a story about like a girl learning about self confidence and her values as a person. She like learns the rules of a like. Hardcore video game, and then someone's like, oh yeah, and there's her friend is obsessed with the original Sword Art Online experiment, and she's using the same equipment, and she wants to commit suicide, and the first girl has to stop her by killing her in the game and forcing her to fulfill a promise about who will win, but she's really good, so it's going to be really, really hard to kill her. It's like,
so it's sort of like half like insert fan fiction, half like someone competent writing a story.
Half girls in panzer, half like half Sword Art Online, basically.
I think it's more like 75-25.
Yeah.
The Sword Art Online stuff, I don't think it came in as big as you do, but maybe I just have different...
It came in and informed Pito's character, and I was already like, oh, someone who's like super rich and super good at the game. And like the justification that she's super strong and like really hard to beat is just because she's been playing forever, and so her character's like level 1 million, which is one of those classic things of like how people who don't play video games think video games work.
Yeah.
Where you like having max stats and like health and speed and stuff shouldn't make you literally unbeatable in the game. No video games like that.
Then there's the whole 10,000 hour thing. So
Malcolm Gladwell.
That was my problem with Otokoi. The few like MMO episodes was main. One of the guys is like super attacker and he's like incredible. And I'm just like, it's not how MMOs work though. And that was kind of a down point for me, considering all the other gaming references are so on point and there's so many. And
all the references of people playing games are super accurate, but all the references about actually being in a game are complete like nonsense. So
like the Monster Hunter references are on point and amazing. Mm-hmm. And they have actual Monster Hunter footage in it, which I adore because, man, I love Monster Hunter. But yeah, that's a good show.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. At the end, I kind of resented the fact that it was... so gag/skit focused, because I don't know, like by the end I kind of wanted there to be more. I wanted this to be the first core of a 2-core anime, and the second core is like them getting more serious and trying to remove beyond stuff, and they have to think they're getting a second core or second season, because because they introduce a character two episodes before the end, and they have that.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief in that there is going to be a second season is, for a start, it ends with like "see you soon," and then secondly, it's a Noitamin A anime, and for a Noitamin A anime, it seems like it's on pretty low budget.
Yeah, and it's making upper 3,000s in projected to make upper 3,000s for sales too. Sword Art Online did really well for a normal anime and terrible for a Sword Art Online anime, so it's not going to get another season, which it shouldn't. So
yeah, so that just makes me think that they've just got a budget. They could either do one really nice season, or they could have the budget for two seasons.
And they have absolutely nobody. All the voices except for Koyanagi, Glasses Girl, are nobodies. So
no, like, that's not true.
Who's who?
That's not true. The redhead guy is really famous too, and I can't remember his name.
Oh, okay. But no, at least Narumi and what's his face,
Bifuji,
are both not like. Narumi's literally never done anything before this, so
is that sort of weirdly appropriate for it that you have like the two juniors are both played by junior voice actors, and the two seniors are both played by more prominent people?
It's something that happens a lot, because like C3BU, Stella Women's Academy, C3 Club, the non-comedy airsoft anime by Gainax, actually literally has like a super experienced voice actress as the upperclassmen, and all the underclassmen are brand new voice actresses, and it works really well.
Sorry, the Kabakura is Sugita, and Sugita is in fucking everything.
Oh.
If you know anime, he's in that one that you're on. He's Kyon from Haruhi.
Oh yes.
He's Gintoki. He's Rock in Pokemon, or is it called Takashi? He's fucking huge.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
and Koyanagi is also like one of the biggest. That's Miyuki, whatever the one I talk about like every episode. Yeah, but
Miyuki Sawashiro.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and she's in everything.
Oh, she's
just had a baby.
She's Kurapika.
So.
Did you guys read that thing about how much sort of voice actors actually get paid?
No.
I did. Linked it to you guys. It's another thing you do.
We'll put it in the show notes too.
It seemed pretty much what I would expect.
Fucking insane.
Everything I've heard about voice acting in the West makes it out as not a particularly well compensated career, and the Japanese scene doesn't sound that much different. But the biggest difference sounded like it's more hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely more pressure on having to prove yourself for a couple of shows before you can get given a decent role.
Yeah.
Well, it's that, and then it's also getting in cahoots with like producers and directors who will then be like,
yeah,
oh, I like this person, so I'm going to use it. I can't remember the example they gave, but there's one director who, if someone likes them, then like you are in his pretty much every show he's directed. And there was one voice actor who was in like, of her 26 anime roles of that year, she was in 18 of them were this one director's anime, which is insane. Like, yeah, so it's a really interesting read. We should put it in the show notes. It's absolutely fascinating.
Sure, just link it to me and I'll throw it up there. But yeah, I liked Wotakoi, but like I wanted more romance by the end. Like my favorite bit was still Nifuji asking, you guys aren't like this when you're alone. And they're like, oh no, we're different. And then like him realizing like, oh, maybe there's something not great with my relationship. And then he takes actions to do it. And like, that's my shit. So I love that stuff. And
yeah, that little glimpse into their lives before they like in the last episode was really great.
Yeah. And it just makes me want more. It makes me want like less gags about like, I don't know. I kind of wish that they had introduced like the tomboy that Nifuchi's younger brother was getting into, because it'd been more time for like to like cement what Narumi and Nifuchi's relationship going forward is going to be like. So
mm-hmm.
And I imagine then it was like a last minute decision to include them or not, right?
In terms of how it follows the manga's arc, she perhaps comes in later than they do in the manga, so I think it's more they actually gave more time to the main two couples than before they introduced them than they do in the manga. The one interesting thing is the entire date episode when they go to a fairground is actually told in flashbacks paced out in between the rest. It's not told as one continuous thing in the manga.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like just an anecdote which is played out throughout the the rest of the story, so...
That's cool.
I don't know, it has a different structure.
How are you feeling about the manga? Is it better, worse, different?
I like it a lot. It was very enjoyable.
Because I know that's like, I know that the manga's done gangbusters, and the fact that like the manga sales are great and it's doing above average for a low budget anime that nominally headlines two nobodies. It'll probably get a second season. I think that, yeah, being like the see you again soon at the end is either extremely poignant or a sign that they're going to get another season.
Seems like there's enough material, and also, as you say, it sounds like it's doing well enough.
And I'm glad.
It's a webcomic, right?
Yeah, well, it's a webcomic that's now a weekly.
Oh, serialized.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah,
no, I really enjoy it. I asked my friend, my Japanese friend, if he liked it, and he said it was too unrealistic, which made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty fucking huge nerds, and
I should say that the one wish that I had was a better translation, because there's hundreds of jokes that have just gone completely by me, and I only know because Mids pulls me up and is like, "Did you get that one?" And I was like, "No, I didn't fucking get it." She was like, "Well, it's from this thing that happened years ago." And I'm like, "Okay, great. Well, thanks for reminding me that the subs are abysmal because they're fucking done by Amazon Prime and they don't give a shit."
Is someone going to have a license for a...
That's my one wish.
...for a physical release? I'm looking this up right now.
Maybe. Don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the Amazon stuff.
Nope, it's only... I mean, so far only Amazon's licensed it. That's weird. I would expect Sentai to pick it up or something. For physical release.
Yeah. Other shit that I'm watching real quick. Uma Musume ended amazingly because 13 horse girls won a race all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fucking question me on it. And then they had a big song. It was fantastic. It was
beautiful. I'm not questioning you because it's anime.
so the reward of winning the race in Uma Musume Pretty Derby.
Oh man, if only. Am I right, guys?
is getting to perform an idol routine, right?
Yeah, they perform an idol show, not gambling. Not gambling.
So the reward of all 13 winning is that they just do a big group number.
They just do a big number.
Did you cry?
Cry with pure beauty, because man, I loved all 13 of them.
Even though one of them should be dead, right?
Yeah, one of them should be dead. They do Silent Suzuka. They're all based on real horses. Silent Suzuka breaks her leg in one of the races, and the real life story is that she dies from it. And in this one, she recovers and then wins a couple more cups.
unrealistic.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Actually, my main problem with it was that there's some really good characters, but they mostly focus on Special Week and Silent Suzuka. I would have liked them to at least mention a bit more of the characters, apart from like the six from Team Speaker, and even then, they don't get much showtime. But it's all just to sell the video game, so it's going to work. Oh, and then also, there's one commentator who's an anime commentator, and there's one commentator who not only sounds like a real horse commentator, but is drawn differently to look like a real person. So I can't be asked to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that's a real commentator. It's
pretty fucking meta.
Yeah, they've got a real fucking horse commentator on it, and then she only says like three words, which is like... Yes, the horse girls are racing really well, aren't they? And you're just like, fuck.
I wonder if that is like an actual like horse racing celebrity or something who just like got brought in and she just says three things.
Oh no, it almost certainly is, because she looks so out of place throughout the whole show, and she says like five lines an episode, if that. Like, she definitely is a real person, and I'm going to find it out. The other thing that I'm watching, which is good, is A Manchu Advance, which I know that Cody's also watching.
I haven't been watching it, so it's like... I was like, well, I'd like to watch that, but I really should rewatch the previous season.
Why? You don't need to watch it. It's the same shit. They're just more gay. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Yeah, it's really good. I absolutely love A Manchu Advance.
What's it about, real quick?
It's about...
Oh, that's Yuru diving, right?
Yeah, basically. It's about a girl who moves from Tokyo to a seaside town, and then she gets into diving club at school. Which is insane that a school has a diving club, because diving equipment is ridiculously expensive, and so is like doing a single dive. I can't believe they have funds in a school for diving, but they do, and it's really good. It's just really cute. It's really lovely. There's one really good OVA, which I can't remember whether we talked about, which is just about like some of her friends from Tokyo coming to visit her, and then it's all sort of like them realizing that she's found like an actual real place that she likes, and friendships with Picari that she really loves and like gets along with, and then realizing that she's been out of the loop of their friendship, and then her realizing that she's been out of the loop of their friendship, and whilst they're still friends, they don't have that connection that they used to. It's really like poignant and kind of heartbreaking, but also kind of uplifting, and it was, I felt, done really beautifully. But it's a good show. I really liked it. Yeah, and it's just more of that, basically. It's fun.
Cool. Well, you go ahead and look up that horse commentator. Duncan, you said you had a surprise for us.
This week I've watched Rin, Daughter of Mnemosyne.
Oh.
Oh, no. Why? Why? Why?
That's the reaction I expected from John.
Go back in time and change your mind.
And I remember...
What was it called, sorry? Rin?
Rin.
Oh, right.
It's just porn.
Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, it is a late 2008 OVA, which is sort of fantasy horror with a lot of nudity and a focus on S&M. And that's how I remember it. I remember having watched it years ago and having thought of it as a quite pointlessly violent show which didn't have much to say, and like thinking, well, I guess that exists. But I decided to rewatch it because I was doing a replay of Lady Killer in a Bind, and one of the characters mentions it's their problematic fave.
That's so Christine Love.
Yeah. And having rewatched it, I actually think it might be better than I thought it was. So,
meaning what?
So, it actually does some really good world building in a weird way. It's 6 episodes, and it's set over a 65-year span. And within the span of years, you actually do get a sense that the society around the main characters is changing. So, in the first episode, which is in 1990, their office is brand new. They've just moved in, and they've set up their little private detective company. By the final one, it's just run down. There's huge cracks in the wall. There's like scaffolding up around it, and everything's getting rebuilt and changed around it. And while the first starts off relatively contemporary, by the time it's ended, it's drifted into a very cyberpunk place. And it actually has some interesting ideas around the cyberpunk stuff. It does drift into the whole thing of having a alternate reality where, which has become a what's the best way to describe it? An opiate of the masses type thing, where everyone's finds real life boring, so off they drift into this alternate reality. But it has some interesting little takes on that. Like, it turns out that it's become so pervasive that most people are, instead of buying clothes, they're buying skins, which they have overlaid over their clothes, and so walking around the world, people are like shopping for skins because everyone just sees it like that. And it's just,
is that meant as like social commentary, or is it just like a weird obsession of the plot?
I mean, that's the problem with the show. I think it is a bit of both, that it does seem to have things to say, but it sort of mumbles them and then moves on to another point, which is probably why I emphasize with it. But
don't be so mean to yourself.
I think the thing is that when I have problems with a show with fan service, I think it's normally because the nudity doesn't serve any purpose, and it doesn't actually mesh with any of the themes they're talking about. Although some of it may be crass, it does, when your themes are that, when your main character is an immortal and part of the plot is about how over time people become accustomed to things and become bored and start looking for new sensations and new highs, and stretch that over someone who's 1,000 years old. Well, okay, if you're going to commit to that as your plot, then fair enough, you can do some stuff. And I think that's the thing. It's like, I know I hated Attack on Titan, which variously has its characters destroyed in many horrific ways. And by that measure, I should hate this, because in one of the episodes, someone literally goes through a jet engine.
It's rough. Wow.
And she does say afterwards, because spoiler, being immortal, she survives. That's the first time she's ever had her whole body destroyed. But they do seem to, like you were saying about Gun Gale, is that they do have rules over what constitutes the immortality in the series. And it tries to say stuff about gender, and it tries to say stuff about... But it doesn't do it with any subtlety. And I think that's what it says about the way time passes differently and for different people. And like, it has three generations of the same family split between the six episodes, which is a great thing, because you get to see how some of them are really similar, and how a parent who had a certain amount of trauma will try and protect their child from that, and then push them into an entirely different kind, which is, you don't tend to get to see that over three generations very often. But, and so that was nice. But, and while this series deals very well with the effects of time, it just fails miserably with its gender stuff. It just, male immortals become quote unquote angels, which are basically winged vampires who only seem to want to literally devour the female immortals. And it's just gaudy and stupid, and it's like just there and annoying. But I don't know. It was like, I enjoyed what they did with time and what they did with the characters with that, but the overarching meta fantasy plot was its downfall. And it's a surprisingly interesting bit of world building with sadly a bit too much TNA and a little bit of a retrograde attitude to gender, and that's it.
Par for the course, unfortunately. Well, that's interesting, because I've only ever heard people bag on that show as being like cheesy and bad and shitty. So
all I remember is that it was violent and borderline porn most of the time.
I mean, the GIFs when searching it doesn't help.
Yeah, I did a Google image search. And
yeah, I would say never search for those GIFs at work, Andy.
Don't worry, I will not.
It does use sex, but it tends to use sex in a way where it's not just this person is naked in a shower for no particular reason. It's this person is naked in a shower because she's just slept with her lover and she's about to head out. It's TNA, but at least there's some reason. It's at least it has a...
At least it has backstory.
Yeah, baby got that backstory.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, Andy, did you find that commentator?
No, I can't. I've been searching for ages. I can't find a single thing.
Okay, Andy's fired. The other three people will come back to pitch to Jeff about our Spotlight anime after this break.
Do you want me to actually leave? I should say, you can put spot Sugita a mile off, because he doesn't change his voice at all. You should be able to spot him. He's Hoshi. He's fucking Aoyama from Zetsubou Sensei, whoever that is.
Supposedly the other actress in...
Wait, who?
Aoyama? Aoyama? I don't watch bad anime.
Fuck you. Fuck you. That's not even funny. Get fucked.
Damn.
Andy not watching anime, shitting over Sinus Zetsu Sensei. You really are fired now. Get the fuck off my podcast.
Oh, it's your podcast now.
And we're back. For the second half of our podcast, we will be pitching different anime to watch for our spotlight to Jeff, the person who successfully pitched the last spotlight anime. John volunteered to go first for some reason.
Well, that's whatever. I am gonna pitch something stupid and fun, and it's Detroit Metal City. Which is a show about a guy who wants to be like a lovey-dovey idol pop singer guy, but is stuck in a death metal band, and it is really funny. And that's kind of the whole pitch. There's really not a lot more to it. It's got some good music jokes in it, a lot of references to metal bands, if I recall correctly. It's good. It's fun. It's funny.
It's got Gene Simmons in it.
It does have Gene Simmons. Not the real one, though. Does it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, in the live action, it has the real Gene Simmons.
Oh, yeah, the live...
Well, we're not pitching the live action, Andy.
I mean, I would also watch the live action one, I'll be honest. It's funny, too. Not as good, though. Not as good.
Yeah, it's good.
But, yeah. So, yeah. Let's watch that.
Okay.
Everybody else's suggestions suck.
Duncan, why don't you prove him wrong?
My suggestion is that we watch Otaku no Video, which is a 1991 Gainax sort of quasi-documentary / parody about otaku culture. And it's very much rooted in the time it was has made. It looks at things like garage kits and talks about the miniature of otaku culture. And it's just, I know Jeff loves Aihono / Blue Blazes, and I just think if he wants to get like a concentrated dose of that in just say a single film, this would be an ideal way of digging into that good Gainax otaku stuff.
Yeah, and it's also worth pointing out that it basically just picks up where Blue Blazes leaves off in terms of the history of Gainax and the people involved in it. So,
all right.
I guess I'm the one going for serious. So when I make a pitch, I usually like try to find writing that I've done about the anime I want to pitch. But this time I realized that I hadn't really written much about this. And in fact, the only place where I have any sort of recording of me talking about this is, again, episodes 1 and episodes 24 of this podcast, where I talked about Crest of the Stars. I always think of it as a sci-fi epic that's a good counterpart to Legend of Galactic Heroes, because while Legend of Galactic Heroes has this massive sprawling setting with high drama and politics and characters whose relationships are largely mediated by their political or personal moral stances, Crest of the Stars is very interesting because it focuses very closely on two people, basically young kids caught in the middle of a sudden intergalactic war, and them kind of navigating this really, I don't know, like complex political setting, and they're both like really well realized. It's a very different, intriguing setting, and it's like a kind of older anime, so it has kind of like the weird idiosyncratic ugliness, and I actually found it an incredibly good thing to watch. And it's weird to think that I literally watched it 3 years ago, well, by the time this gets out, 3 years ago and 2 weeks, but still, yeah, no, I think it's a magnificent short moving sci-fi epic, and I think that it would be good for us to watch.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you want serious or comedy? The one that you're never going to pick in 1,000 years.
I'm actually morbidly curious as to what you would pick as a serious anime.
Oh, no.
Fine. Yeah.
Harsh.
I bought The Night is Short, So Walk On Girl, and it's fucking amazing. It's my favorite film of last year. It was directed by some good fella. Oh, I can't remember his name now. The guy that we all love.
Yuasa.
Except for Ben. Ben hates
Nozaki
him.
Yuasa.
I don't like him. I think he's just average.
But this is sort
it's of... It's like Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, fucking... I quit. I'm quitting this podcast. Goodbye.
This is a film about Sensei trying to follow his love, who's just called the girl. And in this long, single night, crawling through Kyoto's beautiful light district. And it's so fucking good. It's based off the Tatami Galaxy series, which if you have watched, it means that you get all these characters reinvented in different positions and different characters and different roles, which is really enjoyable. If you haven't watched it, doesn't matter because it's fucking joyful anyway. And you then are like, probably intrigued to then check out Tatami Galaxy, which is also like one of the best anime TV series. I adore that show. But So yeah, it's just about a single night in Kyoto. You've got some mystical stuff that references eccentric family. It's just beautiful. It's just like everything that I love about Miyazaki Uesa's art style, concentrated and made nicer by the Tatami Galaxy sort of art style and aesthetics of sort of like very flat visuals, very cleanly cut, defined faces. And it's just a pure delight to watch from beginning to end. And I fucking adored the anime, and I can't wait to watch it again. And I know that everyone here will enjoy it too. So yeah, that's my pitch. It's really, really good.
All right. This is a really tough one. I think this is the hardest pitch that I've definitely ever had to do. But I'm going to have to go with The Night is Short, So Walk On, Girl.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, that sounds great. All of them sound really good. I'm probably going to end up watching all of these things at some point, but I'm excited to watch this.
I'm excited to watch this, but we also gave Andy choosing power next time, so this is the dark timeline.
You always talk
to it. At least he's got the laugh for it. The evil genius.
Calling Andy an evil genius is an insult to evil and to geniuses.
Damn.
That's true.
Okay, well, we have one more thing to do before we wrap up. We actually got a question.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Granted, not one that's particularly, like, useful. I'm going to go ahead and expand it out from beyond what the thing was. Someone wrote in to ask us which song is a worse earworm. Hime Hime from Yawamushi Petal. Hime 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 Suki Suki Dai Suki Hime 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 Kira Kira Rin Kimi to Minnai Reba Watashi de Setai Setai Mutaki. Or Ande's Chucky from Shirobako.
Mate Dom, by the way.
And I'm gonna expand that out to Hime Hime
Hime. That used to you know Hime Hime
is or yeah on this chucky yeah. I'm gonna expand that to is there any other song that got under your skin from an anime that you watched?
Yeah, Clannad, the ending song for that. It's a fucking earworm and a half.
is that a bad song though, Andy? Because I think this is the thing. It has to be a bad piece of music, not just a good piece which is catchy.
Oh no, that the Dango one. Dango, 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 no Kazoku.
The worst one is Stupid Recorder Girl from Nonobiori. Anytime she plays a song, it gets stuck in my head and I want to die. I'm lying. I have no idea. I can't. This is not a question I'm good at answering ever.
What about the whistling song in Kwamati High School?
No. I don't even remember that.
Nobody remembered it. That was the whole point.
The number of times that I've heard Tsubasa wa Kudasai just played and the like cheap emotional like... like, yeah, like... kid song from the 60s. It's just like if they want an easy way to make this like emotional moment, they even play it in fucking Rebuild of Evangelion 2.22. Yeah. Where it's just like,
yeah.
Oh, you're supposed to feel emotional now, so we're gonna play that one song that everyone knows from growing up in school.
Yeah,
mine doesn't have any kind of real cultural cachet to it, but it's just the hook of the OP for Paranoia Agent. It goes
the weird world music, yeah.
For a good 2 weeks out, because like I binge watched that show, and for a good 2 weeks, like just that part would go over and over and over and over and over my brain until I watched it like on YouTube or something like that. And so I've had like the earworm experience with that for sure.
Yeah, OPs can really get inside your head.
Yeah.
I think this question's technically about diegetic music, but yeah, there's a number of times where I just like sit down on my computer and I can't get work done until like I play Stable or something.
Yeah, Mitsuko's songs are fucking excellent. The ones who did like the Space Dandy ED and the Venus to Jesus, which is in Arakawa Under the Bridge.
Mm.
Like her songs are real like earworms. Also, like I know this isn't the Japanese, but the English Pokemon song is always constantly in my head.
With the poker rap?
Not the poker rap, just the original song.
Gotta catch them all, Pokemon.
Want to be the very best.
Like no one ever was. Catch them is my true quest. No, that fucking song's in my head.
What's your cause, though? What's your cause?
Can't remember that line.
Okay, we've made some chopped liver of this question, but that's what you get for joking with us. We don't mess around.
Now, for what it's worth, the Hime Hime song is way more catchy than the Chucky's Ande song.
I like Ande's Chucky. It's referring to like these like old timey like cartoons and stuff, but I do just like the kind of weird Japanese ballad where it's just singing like a guy in like a deep throaty voice.
Oh, also the Lupin song opening, and that's it. Lupin, fucking, that's good.
Yeah, but that's good.
That is good.
That's not loud.
I mean, earworms don't have to be bad. They're just something that gets stuck in your head and you can't get it out because until it drives you fucking crazy.
Yeah, like these two words, Katamari Damacy.
Or Hey Luna Luna. Hey Luna Luna.
I don't really have this problem, though, so I don't have any examples.
Well, that's fine.
What I'm saying is I'm better than all of you.
Sure, why not? All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Remember, find us on Twitter. Email us questions at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook or on iTunes. Just search for Keyframes Podcast. Go ahead and tell a friend about our podcast and about anime. Say goodbye, everybody.
No, don't tell them about anime. Just about a podcast.
Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Everybody.
Oh, that's me. It's my mouse wheel.
What touching your mouse wheel, guy?
That's not that funny, but it got me.